Hello, everyone. Everyone on Zoom and everyone here in Maryland. I'm an alcoholic. I want to just tell you that this is way out of my comfort zone. I'm an introvert. And I'm going to keep it simple because that's the best thing for me, for this mind. So my sobriety date is January 15th of 1990, and that's by God's grace and also the support of this fellowship. So I'm very pleased to be able to share with you tonight. I have a thing about, like, if I were to write a paper in college, I tend to put a lot of words down on paper. And I tend to get things too large. So with this process, I'm hoping to keep it very simple and very experiential, in a sense, for me. So I'm just going to share my experience with this step and my understanding. And I've got to say that understanding has evolved over the years. It certainly is a lot better than it used to be. So what I want to tell you about before I came to AA is that I was in total meltdown form. And everything was, it seemed to be collapsing around me. And alcohol had a lot to do with that. As I read the big book over the years, one of the chapters that really excites me and always feeds me is We Agnostics. But I'm going to describe my drinking days by telling you that I saw myself in We Agnostics when they talked about the bedevilments, because I had every single one of them. Trouble with personal relationships. My first marriage ended in divorce, and a lot of that had to do with my drinking. Emotions were out of control. You never know who you were going to get. The nice Marilyn, the mean Marilyn, just the Marilyn didn't show up. There were a lot of different Marilyns. And I lived in misery and depression. Depression is it's one of my issues that I think was with me from childhood, but it sure does get worse when you drink. I felt useless. I had a lot of fear, demoralization, unhappiness, and hopelessness. So that's how I entered the program. So I'm going to break down this step one, in kind of a simplistic way, but I'm going to talk about each word. So I believe that words are powerful. They can bring judgment, prejudice, anger, destruction, or they can bring commonality, hope, peace, help. All the things that encourage healing. And so as I go through this step, I hope to express the latter, not the first part. Oh. If you hear that, I'm in trouble. If you hear the first part. Okay. So, I didn't understand anything when I first came to AA. I came, my brain was all foggy. I was suffering with a lot of depression, a lot of anxiety and fear. A colleague or a co-worker who was Miss AA, she was so gung-ho, she had 2 years of sobriety, and she wore it right here. It was wonderful. And she brought me to my first meeting. We had become friends, and she figured what I was doing out pretty quickly. And she asked me to my first meeting. But there was a little catch there, because she was legally blind, so I had to drive. So anyway, later on in my life, in my sobriety, early sobriety, she became my first sponsor. So I came in with a lot of defensiveness, a lot of reservations. And dear Glenda, she told me, because I said, I can't go there because I'm not an alcoholic. And she said, all you have to do is have a desire to stop drinking. And I said, well, yeah, I do. Because my biggest fear was I was going to get caught. I was a sneaky drinker. I drank at home. But on the down low, when my husband was out, he was out a lot on business meetings and so on. And so I thought, well, geez, I can do that. So my first meeting was a closed meeting, but hey, I came in with a desire to stop drinking. And the neat thing was I was accepted.
No, Bobby, hey!
So are they talking to me?
No.
That's a joke. Got to keep it light. We're not a glum lot. Okay, so I came with a desire to stop drinking. And that was, for me, a very primitive but profound form of acceptance. That I had finally been able to say, I'm an alcoholic. Or, no, I have a problem with drinking. I didn't say that for a little bit. So, here we go. This is how I'm going to break down a step. I'm going to start with each word. So the first word is we. Now, I want to make my mother proud. She's not with us today at all. I mean, she's passed away. But she was a teacher in English. Grammar was her thing. And she was very good at telling me all that. And she would, when I was in college, it would be late at night, I'd write her a letter. And I don't know what I wrote. She'd correct it and send it back to me. Yeah. So we is the first person plural pronoun. And our is a possessive pronoun. So I'm going to read this step the way that I want to emphasize it. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. So, the we, what it did for me is it gave me a strong identification. You were my people. You had what the issues that I had. So, I gotta say though, when I came in, I brought the me, myself, and I. And so here's my little saying that I came up with this while I was doing this. Okay, so at first I brought the me to the we. I didn't understand the we because it was all about me and my pain and my problems. And I had a lot of them. So the steps were a language I didn't understand, but I did understand the we. And that was important. That kept me coming. So, step one, and my first few meetings, was my first awareness that I was not alone. I wasn't the only person with the problem. The word we didn't single me out, which I liked. It was more comfortable, because it was the we, not the me. And so, that's the we. We admitted. Admitted, or admitting, is to acknowledge or confess to something. It has a powerful first break for getting away from the denial. To admit something. That was a little tricky because my life was basically made up of a lot of lies and alibis. So, step one starts with the collective admission or confession of truth. And the truth is, we admitted we were alcoholic. Okay, so step one, and that process is the foot in the door, and it's the first start of change for, it was for me. So what did we admit? We admitted we were powerless. By definition, it's lacking power or ability, inability to affect change to any situation. I found out through the years that there's a lot of other things I'm powerless over as well. But at least now I have the tools and the support to be able to deal with them. Another definition of powerless is to be devoid of strength and resources. I had come to the end of my resources, for sure. So all my attempts to control my drinking had failed. It did become necessary for me to admit defeat, and I really hate the word failure. But admitting defeat was something I could do. The reason being, and this is a little sick in and of itself, but when I admitted defeat, it worked because it was kind of saying that there was something outside, there was some outside source to blame. So it was alcohol, it was my family, it was my failing marriage, it was my horribly defiant teenage daughter. So there were a lot of things going on. Because of my drinking, you're going to have to forgive this little trick because it's spring now and my nose is going to be dripping. Okay. We admitted we were powerless over, of course, alcohol. What is alcohol? You know what it is. You know what it does. So I'm not going to go into that. But it is, as the big book says, it's cunning, baffling, powerful. It describes our disease is a spiritual malady. It's an obsession of the mind. And it also has the phenomenon of craving. You start, you can't stop. So I used alcohol, and it progressively over. I drank over 21 years, during that time, I had such a love trust relationship with it. Even though it wasn't helping, it seemed that afterwards the biggest part of my hangovers was tremendous guilt and shame, but also a lot of depression. It's a depressant drug. So it was feeding the very malady that I had from early on in my life. So now we're down to, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Then there's this dash. And it's like this blank. It's like, what? Okay, oh, that. Our lives had become unmanageable. Unmanageable. I want to talk a little bit about the other words first. Lives means our life experiences, and they were getting out of control. They were unmanageable. We had become, that to me implies that things progressively got worse. They weren't going to ever get better, even though there's this sense of denial. And, you know, I guess I can see that for myself as being real insanity, because it's like I was out of touch with that. And I just did what I always did. Unmanageable by definition is simply things that are difficult or impossible to manage. That makes sense. You can't manage them, you can't manipulate them, and you can't control them. Things are unmanageable. I found that the dynamic of being out of control or unmanageable was one of those things that caused me a lot of desperation and anxiety. I was just like, whoa. I didn't feel like I could function, even though I was functioning. I mean, I would try to function. So what happened because of my life being unmanageable is that I came to AA, as many of us do, with the gift of desperation. I had tried so many things over the years. I had tried, I had these wonderful classic, very small, but very what I thought would work, prayers. And they were simply, help me. And it was like, help me get home when I got one eye, one eye closed or my eyes are squinting or I'm riding on the berm. That was one of my classics, because if I didn't cross the middle line, then, you know. How's my time?
You're doing fine. Okay. Don't worry.
Okay. So, anyway, the gift of desperation, I when I first came in, I did go to counseling for, I think it was a year, a place connected with Glen Bay in Ohio. And I can remember the counselor had this circle that she called the life pie, I think she called it. And it had little wedges of pie in it, like the little wedges. And each one had a life area. And I was to look at this and see what areas of my life were affected or impacted by alcohol. And they were, if I can remember correctly, it's mental, emotional, or mental thinking, you know, emotional, relational, spiritual, physical, social, financial, legal. There's probably some others, but I can't think of them right now. And for each one, I could see what alcohol was doing. My minor in college was psychology. I really didn't want to think I was mentally ill. But the fact of the matter is, the insanity that became my life really did prove that. And it just was kind of crazy. So, although step one didn't make much sense to me when I came in, I'll tell you what, that repetition of hearing them and hearing them and hearing them over and over again, as well as the traditions, because frankly, it's because of the tradition that you could just have a desire to stop drinking is what made me feel like I could come here. So, the clarity of the we brought to me, and I think it brings to a lot of us, especially people new in the program, as I was, because I this kind of reflected me back to my beginnings. It brought that glimmer of hope. It was just maybe this will work. And then the other part to that is, The steps are read in the meeting. And step one, or any of them, I didn't understand any of them actually, but what happened was over time when I heard you talk and the stories and your experience with it, everything started to sort of make sense and gel together. There were a couple, I got to make a confession. You won't hear me stand up here and quote the big book, because I don't have that kind of brain anymore. I'm a little on the old side, but I don't think I ever got to that point where I could like ratchet off anything that I, you know, any memorizing or whatever. But I do have a very nice, effective relationship with Google. And I also have a very effective relationship with some of the tools, like there's an index and there's a, you know, so I could look a lot of things up, and it was really a neat thing because it was a good review for me. But the quote that from page 17 in the big book, which is in Bill's story, I believe. But anyway, but there exists among us a fellowship, a friendliness, and an understanding which is indescribably wonderful. And then the other one on that same page is the feeling of having shared in a common peril is one element in the powerful cement which binds us. And I found that very comforting. We aren't alone. We're not unique. And I came in with that terminal uniqueness that, that should not be, or that couldn't be me. But what it was is I just wasn't willing to admit things quite yet. But the admission or the confession, I like to call it a confession too, because we admitted, it's the first therapeutic action that connected me to truth. My truth was basically, for years, just a lie. So hearing truth for the first time was very powerful, and it started, I believe it started the healing process. And there's a sense of being accepted by others who have had our same experience. I did feel accepted. Over the years, you share and you share and people share and you hear and you learn and you grow. And it's just something that's been just a wonderful, wonderful gift. In the 12 and 12, which I like to read the 12 and 12. I'll say this, maybe this is kind of a qualification for being up here, but over the years, I really got into a real hunger for learning more about recovery, about the big book. But there was a little bit of a language barrier for me there at first. And I found other resources that were very helpful. I went to two of the Joe McHugh Steps We Took groups, going through the 12 and 12, reading the book. I was in a big book group of women. We read and discussed the big book. So all those things were very helpful as tools to get me to understand it. Not quote it, but at least understand it and be able to apply it to my life. Okay, and then the last quote from 12 and 12 is, "Our admissions of personal powerlessness finally turn out to be firm bedrock upon which happy and purposeful lives may be built." You're going to hear throughout the next, now it's 8 weeks. This is cool because it's already starting to diminish here.
Countdown.
Yeah, the countdown. But you'll hear snippets from my story. And it's going to be one of those things that my life has become purposeful. I just coming off that 2 years of me not being out in meetings face to face, and I just love this. I love seeing your faces, even on Zoom. And it feeds my soul. It makes me feel even more connected, and I needed that. And my prayers before that man over there, who says I'm his favorite speaker because I showed up, before he asked me to do this, I had been praying in my private prayer time in the morning. I was feeling, I wouldn't say useless, but I was feeling just, I need to be connected. I need to have something to connect to and commit to is I guess the best word to say. So this is it. And it's funny how God answers prayers, and it certainly was not a way that I really wanted to be, mainly because I am kind of like on the shy side. I'm a one-on-oner. I've always been a one-on-oner. Or small grouper, but this is good. And So, anyway, in closing, I guess I'll just say this. It's taken this sick puppy a lot of time to get somewhat well, and I'm still hopefully getting weller and weller. My husband always says gooder and gooder, so I'm gonna coin weller and weller. And that's why I keep working. What I do in the program is kind of, it feels very minimal now, but I've kept my connections with my sponsees, meeting, lots of phone calls, but also meeting face-to-face in our home. And I also meet with my sponsor. We're about to embark on another assignment, and she's picked out a book, and we'll be going through it. But we do that every summer when the weather gets better. We meet in Edinburgh by the lake, and we talk through things. So by God's grace, I'm still engrossed in my recovery learning experience. And it only happens for me one day at a time. That's all.
Perfect.
Thank you so much, Marilyn. And so now it is time for questions. Anybody here in the room with a question for Marilyn? Anybody on Zoom, go ahead, unmute yourself, and fire away.
Good evening, Marilyn. I want to thank you so very, very much for saying yes to this. I'm excited to listen to you and this journey through the steps. But for some reason, while you were talking, I remember way, way back to an early meeting I was at, and we were talking about the first step, and someone commented, "My hair is unmanageable, my life is chaotic." And I'd like your response to that.
What's my response to that? I had a sponsee that often would say that her hair was on fire. Yes, there wasn't any area of life that was manageable. When I wasn't drinking, the obsession was still there. The plans were happening, and so, yeah, everything unmanageable, but certainly manageable through this program. I don't know if I answered your question.
I thank you. It was just your reflection on that observation this woman made. So it wasn't really a question.
Yeah, well, okay.
Thank you, Marilyn.
Marilyn, thank you very much. Renee, alcoholic. I wanted to know, how quickly did you identify as a we? Was it something right away, or did it take, to keep coming back until you identified? Or I'm just curious what your how quickly that came for you, and how exactly, I mean, not in a general way, how did you identify?
Okay, that's a very good question. Hope I have an answer. But actually, when I was drinking, I've got to say all my life, my first drink was at 19. But one of the things about me is that I was a very inward person, very shut down. But I didn't have the capacity or the willingness to ask for help. And so I came in as a loner, a rogue, and I did not identify the we. Fortunately, I had my first sponsor was a simple person. She worked a simple program. I don't mean she was simple, but she worked a simple program. And she was my first awareness of what we was, because I, for the first time, established a relationship with her. And from there, the we started to develop, and over time, the me started to drop away. And one of the things that I like about AA is it's a service-oriented program. So simple things. For me, I didn't talk much in meetings for my first year. So I wasn't really acknowledging the we. I wasn't sharing who I was. I had I'll call it a spiritual awakening. It was kind of like a tongue lashing too, but a very loving one. It was very done very nicely. There was some of you may have known him, Lamar, this older gentleman, tall, soft-spoken, but that big boy, you know, he was kind of intimidating for this small person. And I had gone to the Thursday night meeting at St. Vincent's with my sponsor for my first year. And I had a work change. It was the Thursday night meeting, and I had a work change, so I had to work on Thursday nights. And I just dropped out of the meeting, and so did Glenda, because I was a ride. So what happened was my schedule shifted again, so I was able to come back. I come bouncing in to the meeting, oh, so good to see you. And Lamar, after the meeting, came up to me. He said, Marilyn, you know, you never gave anyone your phone number. You never really, you know, told us what happened. And so we thought you went out. And he says, you need to connect here. And I was like, because I'm the me and not the we. So I've had to gradually become invested in the we. I hope that answers your question.
Anybody? Oh.
Ryan. Hello, I'm Ryan. I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Whoa, sorry. Hi, Marilyn. Thanks for sharing. I had too much coffee. like a lot of us, I feel like, you know, you had an awareness you couldn't drink like a normal earthling, and then an admission and an acceptance, and then finally a surrender. How long did that process take? And then at what point were you ready to say, I'm ready to move on to step two? Thanks.
Okay. I don't think that I really worked the steps in my first 3 years of recovery. I went to meetings. We didn't read the big book together, and you know, as far as working the steps, maybe I was just working those wall steps. But I will say that over that length of time, that the steps were beginning to make more sense. But when I started to get into the book, and I'll tell you, I can't think how many years ago it was now, but reading We Agnostics and chewing on it. I didn't bring my big book. I have one of those big, big books. And We Agnostics is very colorful in my big book, because I've just like highlighted, I write in margin, it's all over. So it was when I really started to do that, and that was with my second sponsor, Gina, that we really started to chew on those. And I can really say that I transitioned from just being powerless over alcohol to really what I hear you saying is started the spiritual part of the program. And so I think that was the transition there. But it keeps happening.
Hi, my name is Dan. I'm an alcoholic and an addict. Marilyn, thank you so much for your courage in getting up there and doing this. It's obviously, you talked about wanting a new opportunity to grow here. What I got out of that was you needed some vitality, and you're bringing that to the podium for us. You really are. I really appreciate it. I know your mother would be proud of you. having used the grammatical approach here, definitions and so forth. And it's a great tool. I love what you're doing with that. There's a lot of depth there. You had made the comment that this admission or admission was a confession to you, and you used the term first therapeutic action that connected you to truth. And I can relate to that. I really can. That's a great phrase. That point, do you recall a point at which that you became aware of that, where you did make this confession, or was it immediately, or was that a progressive thing? Thanks.
It was kind of progressive. It took me, I wish I could break it down into months or whatever. It took me a while to actually say, I'm Marilyn, I'm an alcoholic. But it was partly from the learning I was doing, some on my own and so on. But it was actually an awareness of how much my drinking was like everybody else's. So it came gradually, but it didn't take me years. It really took me some months, but I can't break it down more than that, I guess.
Thank you. Jim, alcoholic. So you made a comment about you turned and you looked at the steps, and you said the wall steps. Mm-hmm. I've heard other people say that, you know, they read them and they, yep, I did that. Mm-hmm. But you also said that you never really worked the steps for the first few years. Mm-hmm. Did you kind of think during those years that as you were reading them all the time that you were kind of doing the steps, or did you know that there was more to it and you just weren't really ready to do it?
Good question. Oh, this is a growing experience for me. Actually, I think what it was, God puts the people in your life that you need at the time. And I needed my first sponsor. I really did. She was a cheerleader. She was supportive. She kept me going. But we really didn't delve into the steps. She had done her steps in rehab, I guess. But there's another thing there, too, and I didn't catch it then. But she was legally blind. She wasn't going to sit down and read the big book with me. So, but it was also me not really connecting, because I'm that type of person. It takes me a while to connect, and I wish it hadn't taken so long, but it takes what it takes, and when I started to really get into the big book and the steps, it was like, wow, you know, it was like, wow, this is great stuff. And then I could start growing. My first 3 years were just a lot of chaos, a lot of change, you know, in my life. And so it was kind of like this blur that just happened. But unfortunately, because I hadn't gotten that connected with the steps and with the big book and so on, by year five, I was a mess. And my depression was coming back. And one meeting a week or two meetings wasn't cutting it. And that's when I started to get more connected and be real intentional about meetings and about being a part of.
Thank you.
Thank you, Marilyn. I sure appreciate your willingness to share. And I love what you're doing, breaking it down. And like the other gentleman said, your mama's proud of you, honey. Really. What a little whippersnapper you are.
Does it show?
My question is, when you have new people coming to you now and they're looking for a sponsor and they say something similar to,
I don't know if I have a drinking problem or a drug problem or a whatever problem, but I know that I probably need some help. Can you help me? You know, how do you respond to those younger people that, you know, they're just messed up with everything?
Well, I'll tell you, the one thing I didn't tell you is that I was a drug and alcohol counselor for many years. And so while that was happening, I sponsored, but very minimally, because like at one in outpatient, I had 35 people on my caseload, and in inpatient, when I worked inpatient, I had 20 on my caseload, which is crazy for an inpatient. But I love being able to sit down and just work through the progression and just listen to their story. I had a woman in prison, I worked at Cambridge, who was 72 years old when she came to prison. And she came to prison because she had hit a girl, a 14-year-old, because, and I learned from her, she rode on the berm when she was drunk, like I did. But what happened was, I was able, this woman said she wasn't an alcoholic, she had just had too much to drink. And I loved taking her through her story and through the progression. And I'd love to be able to do that. And hopefully she, when she got out, hopefully she did keep going to meetings and work with a sponsor and everything I told her. But for the most part, the people that I have started with, new people, and I go through the steps with them. And the steps seem to work, because how are you powerless, and so on and so forth.
Anybody else in the room?
Just curious if you didn't drink from your first meeting on, or if it had been a while before you came to your first meeting.
How long was it? Okay, it was... I was trying to get help through a family program, because it was everyone else in my life that... So I tried to go to Glen Bay Family Program, and they told me to go to AA because I was honest about my drinking. So that was on the... my last drink, although I say it's the 15th, that's when I made the decision, because that's when I had gone for my two-hour assessment, in which I was rejected from that program and told to go to AA. And get a sponsor, which I very begrudgingly did. And so I would say from that point on, from that terrible day, which was the 14th of, it was the 15th. No, it was the 14th that outrageous counselor had the audacity to reject me. And then... that week, I came back. I'd gone to a meeting that week, and I hadn't had a drink since. So, by God's grace. So. Is that it? I'm gonna sneak away.
Anybody on Zoom? Last call. We got somebody in the room.
Imagine that. Marilyn, thank you very much. I really appreciate it. I have to be really quick because it's almost over. I usually have to babble if nobody asks any questions. But when you were talking about the steps, you started off with the bedevilments. And it struck me that, you know, the bedevilments is how we start the program and we work towards the promises. Mm-hmm. So how did you come across the bedevilments?
It's my favorite chapter in the big book.
We antagonist?
We antagonist, yes.
See, because I read it really fast, and I thought, you know, I skimmed through how it works, da, 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 and then I saw We Antagonist, and I went, oh my God, they finally have one for me. I was a couple years sober before I figured out it was what it really was.
You know, things, even in reading anything, things stick out at you, and I think those are the spirit prompts of our wonderful higher power, so that's how that happened.
Thanks. All right. Thank you, Marilyn. All right. Do we have any announcements from the membership?
Greenland.
You get your hair. Listen, ladies, if you've never gone to the International Women's Conference, I just want to let you know, February 2023 is going to be held in Dallas. Really nice conference. A lot of neat stuff coming up in your town, too. You know, the Erie Spring Conference, Gunderson, you know. Get busy. Yeah, have fun. Good.
Thanks, Judy. And just a last reminder, if you're in this neck of the woods tomorrow between 5 and 8 at Creamland for a celebration for Kevin, if you just show up and you don't have one of these,
don't worry.
We'll take care of you, or Kevin will take care of you anyways. But most importantly, if you can, just show up. And Marilyn will be speaking again next week. Marilyn, what steps are you doing next week? Do you know?
Two.
Just two? Okay, on step two. And thank everybody. Thank you, everybody, for being here tonight. And if we can close the meeting with the Serenity Prayer, please. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things that cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen.
All right, we did it. Thank you, everybody on Zoom. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. All right. All right. Good job.
Will there be dinner tomorrow night?
Sure, why not?
Does this orange cord stay plugged right into this and then go in there?
That's right. Yeah.
I'll help you until I'm in the way, and then I'll get the hell out of the way.
You're not in the way because half of these cords weren't here last time I hooked all this stuff up, so I just kind of start pulling things.
People are telling
me. I don't set it up.
I tell you, wires, man. How do wires get entangled up?
I don't think there's much thought in putting it all together.
Not one.
That's right. Which I don't mind.
this stuff go in here?
Yeah, that stuff does on that table.
But this stuff all goes back
Yes,
there.
All the electronics go back there.
Is there a chart that says where it goes?
No.
Okay, I'll
this,
just wait.
Yeah, Ryan really knows where it all goes. I know this goes on the bottom.
I'll wait.
There probably should be a picture taken put on there.
Well, I guess if I were here when it came out of the cabinet, then I would help.
Yeah, I'm not even, so. I just know a little bit of putting it back.
Well, are you getting settled? Are you feeling like you're getting...
All right, world, we're doing good. Hey, good job. Thanks.
Welcome. No, absolutely. I'd say.
It's kind of fun.
It is.
She did a nice job.
Yes, she did. I know, but, like, hey, remember how I go to work?
Yeah. I threw it out there, and you got to kick back.
Pretty quick, huh?
Yeah, it got kicked back at me hard.
It gets kicked back fast, usually pretty aggressive. A little bit.
I learned. Before I came to the meeting, we were getting the laundry done, and, like,
yeah, she's at the end of her rope. Okay. I need you kids to go back to school.
What'd you say, Andrew?
It's like, I need you kids to go back to school.
She definitely needs the kids to go back. Dylan will probably go tomorrow.
Yeah?
Is
the little one sick?
Yeah. The oldest and the baby are both. The middle one, nothing yet.
It's coming.
Yeah.
No kidding, really?
And now I sponsor his son.
Well, that's amazing, isn't it?
It's on here.
Yikes! So, how's it? All right, what the hell am I doing here? Where'd Greg go? Boy, he didn't sit around
here. I don't know.
Okay, this. Well, I tell you, I'm a wreck. Oh, jeez, is that not? Wait a second, I've heard.